Welcome, everyone, to the X Factor Files podcast. I'm Daryl.
I'm Philip.
And we are here on a very misty,
dreary,
wanting a nap sort of Sunday.
Yeah, especially since I'm under the weather.
Yeah, you have a cold. It's going around.
Yeah. At first, I thought it was just the side effects from the COVID vaccine, but it seems to be more.
Yeah, I feel I had that a couple weeks ago. It's not fun.
No.
But it's manageable. It's just wanting like a nap all the time.
And feeling gross.
Yeah.
Like, why are things happening inside my head? Sinus, mucus related.
Yeah.
Thoughts are fine. I can handle having thoughts.
Well, that's good. Thoughts are always a good thing. You had a fun Halloween CrossFit thing yesterday.
Yeah. So on a few occasions, I have asked if the coach would play ABBA during the workouts.
Very gay.
And it's got a good beat. So like,
you can actually do things to it.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. If Voulez-Vous or Mamma Mia comes on, like my rotations per minute biking or whatever, just go up and stay up.
Yeah, your gay gene activates.
Yes. So when it came time for our team to come up with a costume and a name, it wasn't even me who suggested it. They were like, oh, what if we dressed up as ABBA? And you had shown me the cat dresses not that long ago.
Yep.
So I was like, what if we do this look? And then we all ended up, like, I painted the ABBA cats.
Yeah.
And they're super cute. I thought they were super cute.
I mean,
other people did too. Like, they complimented me on it.
I'm very proud of you going out and doing crafts without me forcing you to do crafts, because sometimes it's like, look at these things I bought at Michael's. We're painting them. And you're like, okay.
Why?
They're very cute little Christmas houses, though, from a few years ago.
Oh, yeah. You did ice on your shingles.
Yes.
But yeah, it was a good time. I even came up with a few name options.
Okay. So name for the team is for what you're talking about.
Yes.
Okay.
Let me find them. There were four. Does your mother know you lift, bro?
Fun. Okay.
Burpee-voo. Because I couldn't think of a lift that rhymes with voulet, but burpee was close enough.
Yeah.
Gimme a muscle up after midnight.
Cumbersome, but okay. I can see it.
Mamma mia, more snatches?
Okay. You started off strong. Which was great. I love seeing this journey for you. Like,
okay, you try to come up with a pun with an ABBA song.
I'm not going to do it live right now because we're recording and I'm not editing this shit. just so everyone knows, I barely edit this show. I add in our music and that's about it.
So
once, you know, we make like thousands of dollars per episode, I can then employ a producer. But I don't see that happening ever.
I don't see that for us.
Yeah, that's not our journey.
So dear listener,
our journey is to be poor and be nerds.
Dear listener, if you can come up with a great ABBA song spoof to go with the CrossFit or any lifting workout thing, let me know. Put it in the comments. You've heard what my options were. And true. What do you think was the one the team chose?
Yes. Our buns are enjoying seeing us so much this weekend.
Oh, I was asking you, which one do you think the team chose?
Oh, I was transitioning to a different topic, but we'll go back.
Hey, you started us down this road.
I gotta go with the first one.
That was going to be my vote, okay. But they went with Mamma Mia, more snatches.
That's because they're CrossFit people and they want more snatches. And they're not even talking about vaginas.
No. But the coach who was sort of organizing and running the whole thing did play Mamma Mia.
Okay.
Except Dancing Queen then came on later and they're like,
you don't like that.
I don't like that at all. It's overdone. And you just love it because they played it at some royal wedding for the Swedes.
Yeah, they did. I'm sorry. I love
in
royalty.
Costume.
It's what I love, like the whole thing with European monarchies and shit. That's why I'm reading Conclave right now.
And I don't have the patience for monarchies.
Oh. Conclave is very fun. Like I saw it was a movie and I thought it was based on real life, but no, it's like a fictional conclave for popes.
Yeah, and now
and it's dramatic. And I was telling your aunt about it.
I know you two bonded
and
over
she
conclave.
Was like, oh, well, I hear that it's very dramatic. And you were like, what? Cardinals? Drama? And she just gave you a look.
Was that how that went?
It's basically how it went.
Hmm.
You were very skeptical that Cardinals would have any sort of like political motivations or drama.
Well, I wasn't expecting like Real Housewives level, and she seemed to affirm it was that level rather than like base politicking.
It's
but
more...
it's base politicking plus petty drama.
Yeah, I'm halfway through the book right now, so I'll probably finish it this week because we don't have enough politics happening this week. By the time this posts, the U.S. election will have been completed. And are we fucked or are we good?
I'm more pessimistic about it. Yeah. After 2016, I feel like the lesson was set expectations very low.
Mm.
But my sister and cousin sent a text to two of my cousins and me of like, Iowa has Harris up by 2 points. And I don't think that's real, but it's a fun thought exercise.
It was three.
Oh.
Plus three.
I also asked an uncle who lives in Texas if Colin Allred does have a chance of taking out Ted Cruz. Would love that to happen because Ted Cruz doesn't really need a platform.
No.
Republicans writ large don't really need a platform. They're just terrible. But you were saying about the buns.
Oh, yes. So they've enjoyed having us around. Right now, Nick and Nora are on top of a trunk. Underneath a stool, it's complicated. Follow Philip. He's good at posting cute pics of them that actually show the circumstances. It sounds as crazy as it actually is. There is a stool on top of a cushion on top of a big trunk where they love hanging out.
Yeah, it's their favorite place to be.
Yep.
It's like, I don't know if it's because it's elevated, but then because of the old high chair that's on it, they feel protected. Sort of like when they hide behind the bike tire, they feel like we can't see them through the spokes.
Yeah. And they are napping so hard right now. Like Nora's eyes are fully closed.
Well, she's also smushed into Nick.
Yeah.
I think he was grooming for longer than she was. So she was like, hey, groom me too. And he's like, what?
Yeah, he's not into that. Asta is enjoying life on a different floor.
Because they must be separated.
Yeah. But she had great dad time this morning while we were reading comics, and I was ordering the annual Bun Bun calendar after we were lazy and didn't do it last year.
And then we really missed having it.
We did. So they're coming back for our households and the ornaments because we make an ornament with Bun Bun pictures on them every year. They're very cute.
Yes.
And
then there's enough ornaments, like especially handed down from the ancestors.
Yeah, we both have ornaments that are hereditary at this point.
And at some point it would be fun to like get new glass paint and try to trace over the old designs and freshen them up.
Here's a thought. Get blanks and replicate it.
So the old one isn't ruined, you mean?
Yes.
Oh,
they sell the blank ones at all craft stores.
That's true.
And I have plenty of acrylic paint. It sounds like you have more craft time in your future, I'm always supportive of.
I know.
It's good to do something different.
Is it?
It is.
So
what comics have you been reading lately? Speaking of comics this morning.
Hallows Eve from 2023.
Great. Okay. Yeah.
This seems like a fun character. She picks up the characteristics of the mask that she's wearing at the time. So she becomes...
I hope she doesn't pick up a Nixon mask.
Captain America Eve.
Okay.
She becomes Hulk Eve. So that was fun. And she's like, is this what it feels like to be a hero? Oh. Why did I just say civilian?
Oh.
When she was as Captain America. Hulk smashes this like decrepit demon toe and she's like, ew.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. Outdated.
And you're reading Flash Gordon.
Flash Gordon was fun. It was a Ming backstory.
Okay.
They made him an alien instead of a racist trope. So that's nice.
Yes. You have to pivot at this point. Like, we don't need the gross whatever was happening in the 30s and 20s. Or Myrna Loy. Typecast as an Asian woman in her early career.
Yes.
She's not Asian. She's from Montana and is very white.
Yes. And what's her face from West Side Story who won the Oscar?
Natalie Wood.
No. Oh, no. I'm having a gay fail right now.
It's not Chita Rivera.
It's Rita Moreno.
Rita Moreno.
Like having all the angst from her early career when people were typecasting her as like South Asian or South Pacific Islander.
Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yes.
South Pacific.
So bad. Thoroughly Modern Millie, also so bad.
We watched that this weekend and we started it at 9:30 and I'm like, maybe we shouldn't. And you're like, it's fine. And then at the intermission,
we were like, oh no.
10:30. Wait, we started at 9. Intermission was 10:30. We paused to go to the bathroom. And we're like, there's still an hour left.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's a...
real racist tropes in that one.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You want it to be fun because it's Julie Andrews, it's Mary Tyler Moore, it's Carol Channing. But just the racism.
Yeah, I need to ask our theater gay friends who've probably seen the production because it was a movie before it was a musical. It wasn't a musical until like 2003 on Broadway.
Oh.
It was written as a movie. And then they like wrote the book for it and everything for Broadway. And I want to be like, so did they get rid of this? And
how do they pivot it?
I mean, it's easy. Like you just get rid of the kidnapping. Like, or you do kidnapping under serial killer circumstances or something. Oh. There are true crime podcasts out there, which I just dropped the phrase true crime. I hope this is picked up as an algorithm and we get more listeners. Welcome. We are totally a true crime podcast. Keep listening forever.
I don't. I mean, I feel like we'd have a better chance at that with an X Factor episode. That was a thing.
So you did CrossFit. I went to a comic book sale.
Yeah. So we were in our natural habitat.
Nick wants grooming.
Oh.
Oh, he is asking for it so bad.
And Nora has turned the other way.
She put her butt towards his face.
I'd rather look at this wall and shelving unit than deal with you and your bullshit.
So I went to a comic sale. I had arranged to pick up some stuff from a Facebook Marketplace ad, which are Spanish editions of X-Men comics. And I got the Alpha Flight appearances.
And you weren't murdered in a parking lot, so it's a win.
No, and one of our friends, Chris Anderson, from the Minnesota Comic Exchange, he's dealt with him before. Like, he's a nice guy.
Yeah.
So there was 0% chance of murder from that person. Other people who may be in the parking lot, I don't know. I also picked up some random issues that have Alpha Flight appearances in them. I picked you up some Defenders, including the wedding issue between Damon Hellstrom and Hellcat.
Yeah. And Iceman and Angel are in it.
Yeah. And the situation has reversed with Nick and Nora. Nora is asking for grooming while he is grooming himself. He did not get the message. So
it's okay. She's just flopped.
I also got you the Toy Biz action figure of Longshot, our favorite mulleted himbo, who can probably go by his son father, Shatterstar, over on the Toy Biz shelf with Alpha Flight.
Oh, yeah. And it looks like someone fell over.
I mean,
North Star and Aurora.
They've been falling over for a couple weeks after North Star took the tumble into a litter box.
Oh, that's right. Is he in the litter box now? Because I only see...
No, he's there. Aurora's behind him.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I only see one set of feet.
Yeah. So found some fun books. I'm down to like 5 issues I need for the Mark Gruenwald run on Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great.
It's funny because I was collecting that before you were, but only for the D-Man appearances.
The D-Man appearances. And I found a couple issues of Old School X-Factor signed by Luis and Walt Simonson.
Yeah.
For $8 each. And that's cheaper than you can get signatures at a con for. So I'm like, I'm going to pick the covers that look the most fun. And I found 2 of them. One has Boom Boom on it.
You love Boom Boom.
I haven't even read her in classic.
Oh,
chronology.
So you were like, she's such a mess.
She is. I read Leah Williams. I know what happened to Exterminators, and she seems like a fun time.
But was she a mess back then?
Tabitha? Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes, I think she's always been a mess. All right, should we get into our issues? We have Alpha Flight 15, 16, and 17, because I am accelerating our coverage of Alpha Flight because there are so many fucking issues.
Oh, yeah.
And we can handle it. We can totally handle it. So issue 15 is entitled Blind Date from October 1984. Writer and artist is John Byrne. The coloring is Andy Yankus. Letterer, Rick Parker, who we met at C2E2. He actually signed my Gilded Lily issue.
Oh, with
Tom Orzechowski.
They were sharing a table.
They were. Tom makes an appearance later on. Don't worry, he lettered Alpha Flight as well. Our editor is Denny O'Neill. All right.
We've never done the credits before.
I am or now rarely. Because I have everything typed up because I'm working on a super secret Alpha Flight project. So I have everything in front of me. So why not fucking read it? Snowbird, in the guise of Anna McKenzie, goes back to the Northwest Territories to visit Doug Thompson at his home. She reveals herself as Snowbird and confirms she is the superhero Doug knows about. However, the additional layer that she is also a goddess with a purpose she cannot reveal to him. As she is about to depart, Doug tells her that he loves her, which stuns her.
So, yeah, she feels like she owes him an explanation for being AWOL. And she gives the rundown of like, yeah, the old commander was fine with me leaving. He knew, but I couldn't tell the new person. And I also could not stay in jail. And fun fact, when you read this on Marvel Unlimited in that last panel where she's turning away and he's like, but I love you.
When you do panel by panel.
When you do panel by panel, the one immediately after that is just like a pale blue face of Snowbird being like, oh, like the fact that it gets zoomed in on immediately after he says that, it's like, oh, she's not into this.
With Marvel's proprietary smart panel technology.
Is that a thing?
It's called smart panel.
Oh.
Puck and Marinar are at the edge of Lake Ontario as she prepares to jump into the water to locate the murderous monster. Underwater, Marina uses her alien power to ping the Plodex monster in the depths. She swims ever deeper, eventually going through an underwater tunnel to find a bioluminescent cave. On the West Coast, Aurora is in crisis and decides to cut her hair.
Is she okay?
She hasn't dyed it. She did not bleach it. She does this to have some agency over the Jean-Marie persona, which is still trying to manifest within her.
Okay, but on the Marina stuff, the art is super fun.
Okay. What specifically about it?
The darkness around her and some of the shadowy effects where she's going through the crevasse and it's just like her outline and then you can see how narrow it is, which would be terrifying. And the extrasensory like sonar type effect in that one panel to describe how she can sort of extend her senses to know what's happening even though she can't see anything. One of those things are like, she looks somewhat human, but this is a reminder that she's very much not human. And getting stuck in the crevasse is also sort of freaky. Especially the one panel where like the rocks look like they're closing in on her is a neat effect. And who doesn't love a bioluminescent cave?
It's true.
Like, seriously.
Anything about Aurora right now?
I feel like her pointy ears are typically not featured, or at least I've never noticed them being featured in the way that they are as she is like wrapped in a sheet on her and Walter's bed. And she's going through this whole moment. Because I feel like Jean-Paul's ears are consistently shown in pointy, at least when he's like in the suit, less so when he's a civilian.
Right.
And not as much for her. So that's sort of a, oh, they are twins. They're both slightly elvish.
Yes.
But not really elves.
No. Well,
sort
we'll
of.
We'll get into it eventually. In Calgary, Elizabeth Two Young Men storms into her father's exam room, where he was treating a patient, to get his help as shaman. Even though he is delighted to see her, she draws a line and says she is not here to reconcile as child and parent.
No. Very much not. She's very, do not touch me. And I would never come to you for medical anything. We also get Marina and Puck on the beach.
Oh, we're going to get to it.
No, that's where, at least on the Marvel Unlimited one.
Yes, I summarize things a bit differently to help with flow.
Is it?
It is. Merida returns to Puck on the shore, but she has once again reverted to her monstrous form. Puck rightly exclaims, "Oh no, not again," and a battle begins. Namor arrives on the scene and thinks Puck is attacking his not-quite-fiancé, so he clobbers the diminutive Alfin. In the background, a shady figure looks on as the battle heats up and Marina turns her attention to Namor. Puck, coming to, is grasped by the stranger, who uses some form of power to knock him out again. Namor does his best to not harm Marina, but she doesn't give him the same courtesy as she slashes his eyes. He tosses her away, but the stranger touches Namor and similarly incapacitates him. The stranger then reveals himself as the Master of the World. There we go. Now you can go.
Thank you. So there's a fun moment where we learn that Puck was a matador in Spain.
Yes.
That was unexpected.
Olé.
So he used.
Some may say. If you are in the Minnesota area, you can get some potato olés from Taco John's.
What?
They're like my favorite thing.
Oh, I mean, I know that you love potatoes.
Potato olés.
What is a potato olé?
Okay, so a potato olé is basically, you know how they have the crispy crowns as they market them? They're like discs of tater tot. They're not the full tater tot, but like the disc. Same mulched potato product. So Taco John's then has like, again, a proprietary spice blend. They toss these in.
Oh.
As like your side. So instead of fries, you get potato olés with your taco.
Cool.
They're very good. Every time I would, like when I was living in a different place and coming back to Minnesota, I would always get potato olés.
Oh, yeah. I mean, people feel that way about Top the Tater.
Yeah, which is just sour cream with some onion flavoring, people. Like, you can make it at home. I promise you can.
I think I froze some and tried mailing it to someone in Ohio because they were like, I need it for my boyfriend because he's sad and he doesn't have Top the Tater.
You're way too nice to people.
I know. So we learn that Puck has a matador background, and I love that he thinks of this as he's dodging a giant potato-shaped rock, which I guess is appropriate.
Mm.
And yeah, Namor clobbers the wrong person. He has his fun Imperious Rex. Somehow he doesn't notice the shading around Marina's face.
Mm. Like, you can tell she's a little unhinged.
Yeah. And I guess that's it. Oh, she rakes his eyes like she's a pro wrestler about to low blow him.
In the letters column, Todd Blackshaw of Boston, Massachusetts was upset that Sasquatch in his battle with the Super Skrull appeared to be more powerful than the Thing. The writer says Sasquatch should have had a tougher time beating the Skrull, even with the super leukemia impacting the Skrull's strength.
Oof.
I mean, I'm okay with Sasquatch being tougher than a very sick Super Skrull.
There's a some issue. I remember reading it way back when, before I started reading comics, and it was someone having like a boxing tournament, and they went through a couple of different heroes before the Thing finally won, or like tied to earn the Thing's respect that was organizing it.
Oh.
So Colossus was one of the contestants right before the Thing.
Okay.
And it was setting up, in hindsight, it was setting up that the Thing is the most powerful brawler.
Yeah. All right. So what? Within this issue, we see the Master of the World come back. And he's seeming like there's a thread here where he's a baddie for the team. Like, he's a big bad.
Yeah, constantly torturing Marina.
Yeah, and we see that in the previous issue where there's the mysterious creature and everything is really just window dressing for the Master to come back.
Bait.
And I feel that the Master's storyline is so intertwined with what is going on with Marina. And it's interesting to see her as such an important focal point for the book. In this run, like,
I feel like you're coming at that from the perspective of having read much more of the series, where Marina doesn't appear as much, But if you're looking at it from just the first 15, it's like, oh, she's a member of the team. Like, of course.
Sure.
Like, it makes sense for her to be someone's bait and like
Yeah.
constant target of attack.
And we'll get into some of that. I mean, we have plans that we'll announce probably next month for some additional Alpha Flight coverage, where other issues of other titles really focus on Marina. Like, she is a blue chip character in this title.
No.
But, you know, not to speak about where they go in the future, it's hard to deny that John Byrne has really created his own bubble where these characters are existing in a Byrne vacuum. So Namor is someone that Byrne is writing in Fantastic Four, and he will write for the solo title at the end of the 80s. He's currently writing and drawing Fantastic Four at the same time as Alpha Flight.
Okay, I was about to ask, so.
So he's playing in his own sandbox that no one else is messing with. Like, he has total creative control over characters like Myrna and Puck and Heather. Like,
And there's no massive crossover that he has to incorporate with very little notice.
that's the so what we're talking about here is 1984. The only crossover that's ever really happened is Secret Wars and Contest of Champions. Alpha Flight appeared. Contest of Champions is what it is. It's a big battle, basically. You get all the characters, they battle it
Like
out.
they recently redid one with Captain Marvel versus
Yes,
Cyclops or
it's one of
something.
those things they always go back to. Secret Wars, same basic fucking premise. So those are the only two things ever that have happened in Marvel where there's real crossover. We will get in a few ish or episodes to Secret Wars 2 where we have the team tied into that. But otherwise, there's no real crossover.
Event-wise.
Yes, and even though
There's cameos.
and that obviously Alpha Flight came from X-Men, but we're not even seeing a whole lot of that. We'll get to a Wolverine appearance, but it's not like the team shows up and Storm is suddenly an Alpha Flight or something like that. Like, John Byrne is very much doing his own thing and he's creating his own baddies for the title. Like, he's creating things from scratch at this point. He's not going back to like the 60s and being like, oh, this villain, like, no one has seen Grim Reaper for a while. I'll use Grim Reaper in my title.
Oh, yeah.
It's no, I'm creating Master of the World, and Master of the World is not only in this issue, he's going to come back in 10 issues and fuck things up again. So it's interesting to see the development of Alpha Flight and how it's really its own thing, even by this point, by issue 15. Like, it's pretty self-sufficient, where it doesn't need the rest of the larger Marvel universe to exist because of John Byrne's creative power. Like, all these characters are super original, and he doesn't need to rely on past Marvel stuff to make it interesting.
Okay.
Are you ready for issue 16?
Yes.
Issue 16, entitled dot dot dot, and forsaking all others. We have the same creative team, except we have someone on inks. John Byrne, by this time, was being I mean, I just mentioned he's writing and drawing Fantastic Four. He's writing and drawing Alpha Flight and other random things that they'll throw at him. So the finisher, that's the fancy word for inker,
Oh.
is Bob Wiechek. So, or Wiechek? I don't know. If you know, let us know in comments. So at this point, I think he and editorial are realizing that he's not Superman, which he would go on to write in the 80s. And that he needs a little help. We have Bob tagging in to do the inks and to finish those pages so that Andy Yankus can color them. So we're jumping right back in. The master, with his visitor stowed, is cruising around Lake Ontario in a fish-shaped submarine,
It's a fish.
which is completed by a wonderful snarl upon its fishy lips.
Which serves as like a viewport window. Like you can see
Yes.
the window panes within it.
Namor and Puck are restrained in tubes, the failsafe that always holds heroes 100% of the time.
And I like how he has decreased the oxygen for Puck. So he's like, oh, I'm surprised that you're still awake. And for Namor, he just dried him
He's
out.
dehydrating. He's making him jerky.
Did you put those silica packets in from a shoebox?
Yes. Through the layers of glass, Namor apologizes to Puck, whom he thought was attacking Marina rather than defending himself from the crazed monster she had transformed into. Puck, for his part, provokes the master into a villain monologue about how he survived the events of issue four.
Oh my gosh, it's like a level, like, it's a let me open the door for you so that you can start monologuing so I can figure out some way around this. Like, Master of the World just falls hook, line, and sinker.
No pun
And
intended for the fish submarine.
it's true. I did not realize that. And just goes off unprompted.
Do you want to hear the backstory? Because here we go. It turns
Oh.
out the master was thrown free of the explosion and, having thought ahead to such a time when his spaceship might explode, began the slow construction of the submarine 5,000 years ago. He then shows the two that a feral Marina is being held in a water-filled tank. Another Plodex egg survived thousands of years ago, the master explains, but it is in its natural state. Unlike Marina, the other egg remained unprogrammed. And it just so happens the monster from the lake is in another tank like Marina's.
It is the other egg is the monster from the
It
lake.
is.
So the way that the Plodex eggs were supposed to be, like, you get flung to a planet, you scan the creatures, you become like part one of those creatures. So this is like not really like the Autobots when they land on the Beast Wars planet.
You know so much more about Transformers than I do.
I mean, it was just big fun, that one TV show. When like computer graphics were just becoming a thing. So yeah, like they don't typically exist in their natural state, in their otherwise form. They're very amoeba-like.
The master removes the barrier between the two aquatic creatures and they attack one another.
In a flurry of bubbles.
While the master is distracted, Puck tries to escape his tube. The seal is too good, however. This causes Puck to switch tactics. He fakes his own death, and as his monitors are fooled, the master opens the tube to retrieve Puck's body. Puck kicks the master in the face and tumbles over to the ship's controls to free Namor. Puck then rips the master's helmet off. He looks real gross without it. And uses it to break the glass of Marina's tank, which releases water to help Namor gain his strength back. Namor gets up and finishes the job of breaking the glass, which allows water and Marina to get into the main compartment of the sub. The monster oozes out of the tank and starts to cause havoc, eventually causing a hull breach. Namor, restraining Marina's hands, chucks her out of the ship and grabs Puck to get to the surface before the sub catastrophically fails. Once they surface, they see a huge air bubble also rise from the sub's vicinity and assume it exploded. 6 hours later, as Puck waits at the shore, Namor returns from a fruitless search for Marina in Lake Ontario. He then departs for Atlantis. After he leaves, Marina comes forth from the shadows. She shares with Puck that she is ashamed of the monster she became and reveals that the monster she was fighting was actually coded to be her mate. She returns to the lake alone, saying she is no good to be around humans. Nearby in the hospital, Heather is still recovering and ruminating on Guardian's death. Wolverine enters and catches Heather as she falls. At first, she doesn't believe he's there until he assures her it's really him and not another bad dream. He also mentions that he and Puck have crossed paths in the past. In Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, Roger Box is visited by Madison Jeffries. Madison is there because Roger paid him $1,000 to come and see him and help avenge Guardian's death by rebuilding the Box suit. Jeffries, you see, is a transmutator and can make materials bend to his will, be they metal, glass, etc. Roger's purpose in wanting the Box armor to be stronger is his goal of finding and murdering Jerry Jackson and Delphine Courtney. There's a lot there.
I know, and it's the B and C plots are
Plots.
mixed in.
They are.
So it sort of makes sense with how Chad was doing your Alpha Flight panel at the Uncanny Experience of like this Madison Jeffries is sort of a jerk, or coming off as sort of a jerk. And He must have some sort of accent because he keeps calling Guardian Gardein.
He is very blue collar is what it's supposed to come across as.
Oh. And he can make any machine, anything metal, glass, and plastic, duplicate my own parts. So like the box had thrown a box had thrown a box
of
like spare parts and nuts and bolts, and like it transforms into an arm. So that makes it sound like Manson Jeffries can just recreate body parts of his own.
He can, like, do a lot more. You'll see it.
Does he know he can at this moment?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's poorly phrased then. And I think we get more of the hospital thing in the next issue. But when the Master of the World releases the monster into the same tank as Myrna, it has this weird baby face because it had captured and sort of absorbed the baby that it had captured.
Yes, in issue 14.
And it's real gross.
It is.
It's like you get this sort of like Trubic head, and then all of a sudden you get gigantic fangs out of it.
Mm-hmm.
No, thank you. And yeah, there's Puck seems to have a mysterious past that's alluded to by Wolverine.
We know Wolverine's old as fuck.
Well, yes.
So when did they cross paths?
Who knows?
It'll be revealed much, much later.
So pustules is the word that comes to mind with the Master of the World when the helmet comes off, which is just a fun word in general, too.
And he's real gross looking.
And on shore, it's less Myrna emerging because Puck already knows that she's there.
Right. She's emerging from the shadows. She's hiding from Namor.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
But that seems like an important plot point that Puck knew ahead of time. Like, that shouldn't be glossed over as a part of his own character development. So,
in the letters column, Gary West of Cambridge, Massachusetts has high praise for the way in which Heather's departure from the apartment she shared with Mac for so many years was poignant and was a perfect way to portray leaving a beloved home for an uncertain future in a new city. DJ Jenkins of Sudbury, Ontario, joined the speculation train and guessed that Northstar would be the member of the team kicking the bucket in issue 12, which seemed to be a popular guess at the time.
Yeah, because that's not the first one.
No, everyone thought that Northstar would be the one being killed off. All right, so in this issue, the Master came back, and he's gone. Again.
It seems rather quickly.
Yes.
But he seems to have had, like, well, he's had thousands of years to think about alternative plans, so.
And he seems to have had a bigger impact on the team dynamics this time. Like, Myrna left because she's like,
This is the second time it's happened that I've been driven feral.
Yep.
By this person manipulating me.
Yeah.
And the fact that she was basically engaged to Namor and turned down that hunk. Mm-hmm. Oof.
And Puck is more and more like the centering force on the team, I'd say. Like, just like you mentioned, he covered for Myrna. And he
has a good relationship with Heather, we've seen.
So It seems like people are turning to him as a steady force on the team.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
And like, he's not crabby and asshole-ish like Northstar, who isn't even on the team right now. Like, Northstar wants no part of it.
Yeah, this is sort of continuing that theme of focusing on the different characters when they're, like, in very different time zones.
Yes.
I also need to ask, was John Byrne working for the Canadian Department of Tourism?
He was not.
It feels like it was. It has been.
Part of my big Alpha Flight project is looking at secondary resources for things like things that have been written about John Byrne or Alpha Flight. And there's someone who invested like years of his life, like a professor at some university in Canada, all about Canadian comics. And I got two works by him through interlibrary loan. Guess how many pages Alpha Flight is mentioned among hundreds of pages between two books?
12?
Three. This, like, the view Because John Byrne is an expat. He came to America. So there's a very dim view by at least one Canadian scholar on John Byrne's ability to articulate the Canadian experience in the comic medium.
Oh, because he's not, I mean, he's not really talking about the Canadian experience. He's like giving the flyer in the hotel lobby.
Yes.
Sort of facts and figures about the city of Toronto, Lake Erie. Did you know that all these different states in America come to less than 20% individually compared to Lake Ontario, which isn't even the biggest lake?
Yeah.
Also, how did, I feel like, it might just be our perspective as Minnesotans, but I feel like we have a, for as little coastline we have with Lake Superior, that seems to be like our lake.
Yeah.
Like Wisconsin and Michigan are more about Lake Michigan. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania, Ohio, it's all about Lake Erie. Apparently Toronto is all about Lake Ontario. Who cares about Lake Huron, if anyone does?
Yeah.
But like no one really, from our side, no one really talks about Lake Ontario.
No, they don't.
Like for us, it's all about Lake Superior, the North Shore. Like if you want a mysterious lake, like even in the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, where Gordon Lightfoot gives each lake a little blurb. Mm-hmm. Lake Michigan gets like the vacation destination. I think Huron sings, and Ontario and Erie are paired with an industry like shipping. But Superior sings in her ice water mansions. No one else gets that imagery.
Yeah.
So it was very strange that Lake Ontario would get such a focus with its depth and its size. And
there's a fishy submarine that exploded. So the master and the monster both seemingly gone again. Do you think they'll come back?
I don't know about the monster. Namor mentions finding bits and pieces of the monster. I don't think he uses the word ichor or ectoplasm, but well, because he's not a ghost, but like it's like the gross squishy bits that he has found.
So Wolverine's back.
Yes.
And surprisingly for me, he wasn't teased on the cover. Like, John Byrne's not going for, I want to appeal to X-Men fans by throwing a member of the team on the cover.
Oh, yeah. But they did. Oh, X-Factor did that. Had Wolverine on the cover when he had, like, very little in the actual book.
Yes.
To get those crossover sales.
Yes. Roger Box wanting to commit murder is a little surprising.
He must feel like exceptionally violated that his creation was used to kill his friend.
Yes.
Like
that's exactly basically what I wrote. It's like you're reading.
Boyfriend.
Yes. All right. Issue 17 is entitled Dreams Die Hard. ...
And right underneath the word die is Guardian.
So, before we get into it, credits again. Writer and artist John Byrne, who is doing his own inking again. Andy Yankus. Joe Rowe is doing coloring. Joe Rosen on letters. Editor is Denny O'Neill. However, we have additional credits where dialogue pages 8 through 11 and 13 through 16 are Chris Claremont. And inks on pages 8 through 11 and 13 through 16 are Terry Austin. Because there was a separate inker on X-Men when Byrne was drawing it.
Yeah, so, I mean, we'll get into that later. But for this splash page, title page, whatever, it's just a plain white background, and it's Guardian, and you're like, oh, are you in the afterlife? And I was struck by one of the things you've said about Guardian and his glow up, his bulk up, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, he really does look like a normal person.
Yeah.
In this, like, he has some abs.
Yeah.
But he's not, like,
ripped. He's and giant 90s muscular.
Right. Like, he's just a person.
In a flashback from Heather's point of view, Guardian shows off his suit to Heather in his Department H office. He talks to her about Alpha Flight and how it will be more a point of pride for Canada have its own superhero team rather than a fighting force. In way of explanation, he says Canada's just not the kind of country that breeds world-conquering types. Mac wanted Logan to lead the team, but admits that Logan is not the subtle type that may be needed for the type of team he envisions.
His version of subtlety is using one claw instead of six.
Yes. Gary Cody then burst into the room to alert Mac to Weapon X's departure from the country with Charles Xavier. We return to the present day, where Heather is sharing her perspective of this event with Wolverine in her hospital room. In response, Wolverine reflects that Guardian was his closest friend, and Heather responds, saying she sees Wolverine as her child.
I didn't like that dialogue. Like, mostly because it messes with the throuple.
Yeah. Heather shares Mac felt betrayed when Wolverine abandoned them. Returning to her memories, we see Mac called into the minister's office, where Wolverine's escape is framed as a public relations crisis that he needs to solve on behalf of the country. Wolverine provides some notes on his adventures with the X-Men that happened alongside these Canadian events. So we're sort of getting, like, parallel storytelling.
And we, yeah, the time hopping thing.
Yep.
And they're back in their old apartment with their window full of plants, which we love. And
you should cosplay Heather at an Uncanny Experience next year and just somehow find a way to have a frame of plants behind you as you walk everywhere.
I mean, I could just go as Plant Man, because that'll also be like a gigantic horizontal headpiece.
Yeah.
And Mac is in his red plaid that, I mean, it's not unbuttoned enough to show any chest hair, but right. It has in the past. Yes. And we like that.
All right. So we're then thrown back to a reprint of portions of X-Men issue 109, which we covered in our very first Alpha Flight episode.
And hence the credits.
Yes. So Heather reflects that Mac always tried his best to be the good guy, even when he is headed into battle. This leads to Heather taking on the guilt of Mac's death as she walked into the room and distracted him as he is trying to defuse his failing suit. Wolverine, for his part, tries his best to convince Heather that she had no part in Mac's death. Huck then comes by the hospital room, and he and Logan set up a coffee date to catch up with one another.
Oh, hey.
Heather explains that she and Wolverine were reminiscing about Alpha Flight and, in a way, were giving it its last rites. Both Wolverine and Puck push back on Heather and tell her that if she lets the team die, it renders Guardian's death meaningless. Puck says there is only one person who can lead the team, and Wolverine interjects, saying that he is not interested.
And Puck is like, I didn't mean you, bitch.
Puck's like, no. There's another person in mind, and it's the only other person in this room. Wolverine agrees, and Heather embraces the conclusion, saying she will take up the mantle of team leader. And then our B plot here. Checking in on Sasquatch and Aurora, we see Walter in his human form checking in with Aurora, whether she is sure she wants to move forward with what is about to happen.
She's naked in a tube.
With another glass tube.
With some very well-placed bands around it to cover the bits. And
she's like, yeah, throw that switch.
She's got the face mask of Luke Skywalker when he's thawing out from that ice planet.
When he's in the Bacta tank, yeah.
Sure.
Yep.
Thawing out.
So then Walter uses the control panel to realign her molecules, thereby severing her mutant bond with her brother.
That's the goal.
She experiences some great pain, but seems to recover quickly.
I mean, she flies out of the tube.
Yeah. She bounces back.
Yeah. And some well-placed bubbles.
Yes.
And how long will a man lie in the earth ere he rot? That's a fun teaser for the next issue.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right. There's a lot of panels of Guardians battle with the X-Men.
They just full-on reprint a lot of this.
They did. And didn't remember, apparently, a lot of this. Like, I don't remember Colossus looking like such a snack.
Oh, he, yes.
He is snack with two C's.
Yeah, I even showed you in that Spanish reprint yesterday. I'm like, look, they reprinted him looking hot.
Yeah.
It's in black and white in this foreign reprint, but you can still tell.
Yeah. Even, like, the chest striations across his pecs.
Mm-hmm.
And since it's from, like, I feel like we get more Wolverine dialogue from the battle with him and Guardian.
Mm.
I don't remember Wolverine being like, oh, guard, I'm acting like he didn't hit me hard, but he really almost knocked my head off. And one of Guardian's blasts bouncing off of Colossus's steel form and knocking Moira unconscious, and then Banshee just like going off. Because Banshee's there too for reasons.
Yep.
But not in a Speedo like Colossus, which, rude.
He's probably in a turtleneck sweater. They loved throwing Sean Cassidy.
He's got like the 1910s bathing outfit where it's like little shorts and like a full unitard thing.
Mm.
Like, seems very strange. But he goes bonkers when Moira gets knocked out.
So I did want to talk about X-Men Classic 16, or Classic X-Men issue 16, which is a reprint series that they did in the 80s once X-Men got super popular to print off issues that were going to be harder to find. And I think it says something about Alpha Flight that they chose Guardian's first appearance to get that treatment within the first 20 issues. So there are two new pages in here that pertain specifically to what's happening with Guardian. The first new page, we see Mac operating a computer console and reflecting on how powerful and manly Wolverine is, not only due to his adamantium, but his personality too. Mac is running simulations on the computer to see if Wolverine is able to be beaten, and unfortunately, he and the computer are of one mind. They don't think so. However, he knows he has to try his best and recapture Weapon X. So that's before he has to go and burst out of the ground at Wolverine.
Yeah, because the government is real pissed.
In the second new page, Claremont gives a new ending to the main story from 109. In this page, we see Guardian return to Canada via his first ever use of coming to rest relative to the spinning of the Earth, allowing him to escape the X-Men and travel hundreds of miles in the blink of an eye. Mac reflects that he was just as unthinking and brutal as Wolverine in their battle, and that being a superhero isn't a game, is a deadly reality. Mac flies home and is greeted by Heather at the door, where he receives a big hug after his long ordeal. As the story closes out, he says that the responsibility of leading Alpha Flight and proving his worthiness to do so is his burden.
He has a lot to vindicate.
Indeed. In the letter column, this is the first time that we're seeing reactions to issue 12.
Oh.
A lot of people are very actually hurt that Mac is dead. They connected with Guardian and were genuinely shocked when Byrne killed him off. And editor Denny O'Neill, so it's usually the editor who's responding to letters and not the writer. He says that, you know, especially those who pointed to Mac as the glue that held the team together. And he's asking the readers to revisit the first issue and actually analyze who drew the team together to battle Tundra in issue one. It wasn't Mac. It was Heather.
Oh.
Heather is the one that put those cards in the computer to call the team.
Oh, to call them all together?
Yep.
Oh.
So, obviously, as an editor, he had a good relationship with his writer. This was seeded all along, if you look at it in retrospect.
Huh.
So, yeah, that's our three issues.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the team right now?
I mean, I'm sad Marina left,
yeah,
but I'm excited for Heather.
Yeah.
She doesn't get much to do in X-Men Legends, the video game.
Yeah.
Like, she's there, but like, go find my husband. I need him.
Which, it really gets to the agency of the character and what she's seen as, which I address somewhere further along in all these write-ups. Like, Heather was always more than a housewife, and it took the loss of her husband to realize that.
Yeah. Especially when, like, she supported him when he first lost his job. I feel like she did a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Without necessarily getting a whole lot of credit for it.
Yeah. So we're seeing her development. She's finally embracing being the leader, which is great. That she is like, you know what? You're right. I'm the only one who can lead this team, but leaves the question up in the air, what does that mean? Because Guardian was in the thick of things, and Heather, she's been at home. Although I call into question, there's a writing discrepancy in here as well.
And it's either here or one of the comics I was just reading this morning. There were a few typos.
And in issue 11, I believe, Matt comes home, gets that letter from Roxxon, where he's like, I would do the whole honey, I'm home bit, but Heather's at work. I know she's at work, so I'm not going to call out when he flies through the window. So she had another job, but elsewhere it's described as her entire time during the Department H days were housewife, and that's it.
Oh, because she was employed there.
She's employed.
Oh, no, she was before they got married.
Yes, and she gave a 3 weeks notice.
Oh, that's nice of her.
So that's how she knew that some shit was going down. But yeah, I feel that she was working. Like, she didn't spend 10 years at home. Like, Heather's
not the person that would do that.
Yeah. So we'll see where it goes. She's team leader.
Yeah, so, and she has her work cut out for her in bringing everyone back together.
Yeah, what team is the question?
Yeah. Shaman, we see having his own family issues to deal with.
Yeah.
Aurora and Northstar have their family drama to deal with because Northstar also doesn't like Sasquatch and the fact that he's hooking up with his sister, yeah, with Northstar's sister.
Yes.
Pronouns. And yeah, it seems like Huck and Snowbird are the only ones that have it together at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And Marihana has just left.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. So we'll see as we go forward what team means to Alpha Flight.
Yeah.
And how they interact with one another.
In Bun Bun News, they have had both had their seagulls. They did a little bit more grooming. And then they settled in. And then, like, settled in even harder. You know how in Pokemon at the beginning, when Ash's Caterpie evolves into the Chrysalis form, and it's like, Chris, Pokemon name that I can't think of right now, use your power, harden, and it just glistens. Like, that's what Nick just did. He just, like, naps harder.
So, everyone, that was three issues of Alpha Flight, three issues of John Byrne Alpha Flight, which
yeah,
are dense.
I thought they read pretty quick, but they definitely have more words, more context.
Yes.
Like, it's not as much as Claremont, but it's enough to get plot and character development and without overcrowding everything.
Yeah. So let us know your reactions as we enter into this new phase of the team, and we will catch you next time.
Be well.
Bye.